Well, hello everybody. We're on Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 156A. And some of these stanzas are repeating now, but soon some very interesting ones are coming. We're on page 659 of the appendix. The last program was 155A-B, kind of a two-hour program that may be possibly broken, but anyway, I'll try to keep the hour limit best I can. Three constellations are connected with the fifth logoic principle in its threefold manifestation: Sirius, two of the Pleiades, and a small constellation whose name must be intuitively ascertained. And I dealt with this in the last program, because the Pleiades were being discussed, and, you know, we had sort of Sirius proposed Dubé, Sirius Merope, Electra, and Leo Minor, the suggestion of the astrologer rheologist Stephen Pugh. So we won't deal with that any further. Cosmic avatars represent embodied forces from the following centers, and this we've done too. Sirius and that one of the seven stars of the Great Bear, which is ensouled by the prototype of the Lord of the Third Ray, and our own cosmic center. Well, okay, have we done this? The Lord, so we have Sirius, and then Alioth, the Lord of the Third Ray, and our own cosmic center. What is that? What is our own cosmic center? The one about whom, I suppose. That is the local hub of the wheel around which our sun and its system, sometimes strangely called a constellation, revolves. The avatars descend to bring benevolence and that which is of great value to a focus, a lesser focus, which needs it. And they do this out of pure grace, pure benevolence, with no reward to themselves. It's not part of their evolutionary process. It is purely an act of the will to good, or we might even say an act of the good. So there's a whole section in Cosmic Fire on cosmic avatars and their sources. It's really quite amazing. Having been through the book once, one can envision another and another and another time. Only one being from Sirius has visited our system, and that was at the time of individualization. Well, let's take a look here at what is said in, let's say, the Rays and Initiations, Eternal Spirits. Oh, that's Esoteric Healing. That's the wrong one. Let's see how this goes. Eternal. This is the contents of Shambhala. And certain eternal spirits from such centers of dynamic spiritual life as Sirius, but it says such centers, it may not be Sirius itself, or from the constellation which at any one time forms a triangle with our sun and Sirius. So these are the lives who find themselves in the council chamber of Shambhala. It seems to suggest that the Buddhas of activity, certain eternal spirits from such centers of dynamic spiritual life as Sirius, it doesn't say for sure, or from the constellation which at any one time forms a triangle with our Sun and Sirius, and a representative from Venus, are of greater, far greater advancement than the human being who is now coming into contact with Shambhala for the first time. So this is Rays and the Initiations, 141-142. From the constellation, from such centers of dynamic spiritual life as Sirius, is it Sirius itself? That's the question. Because it says only one being from Sirius has visited our system. And that was at the time of individualization, which is, 21 million years ago. Whoops, that won't do. Years ago. So is this a contradiction? Suffice it to say, it is a rare occurrence. And we wonder how many beings from the Pleiades, for instance, or from other cosmic centers have actually visited, or at least what their representatives may be. Perhaps they are represented in some way while not actually visiting. These have to do with the affairs and processes of higher centers than we can understand or penetrate. The question is, if there is an initiation of our solar logos, if there is an initiation of our solar logos, does the logos of Sirius, who is an initiator, have to, quote, visit our system? Because various initiations are occurring. Who then is the initiator? Our solar logos has taken one initiation, two initiations actually, and probably in this solar system, because this is the system of the second aspect of the soul, second aspect, i.e. of the soul, and it is when the soul is being emphasized that initiations are taken. At the time of individualization on our planet, are we talking about solar logoic individualization? I think that's not too likely. So perhaps there was something extremely important involving Sirius, our soul logos, and the planetary logos of the Earth. And when did our solar logos or our planetary logos take their earlier initiations? I think a major initiation for our planetary logos occurred at the time of individualization. This seems to suggest a first initiation. We might look that up and see. Major initiation, logos, individualization. Let's see. These figures should be studied, for they hold the mystery hid, and though the true occult meaning will not be revealed until the third major initiation, nor fully comprehended until the fifth, yet light may stream in upon this difficult point. Equally so in the next solar system, individualization, if such an inadequate term may be applied to a state of consciousness inconceivable to an initiate of the third initiation, will not be possible until the second or sixth stage of Pleroma. Consciousness will then blaze forth on the monadic plane, it will be the plane of individualization. Okay, that's one point. Not directly related. Mercury was active at the time of individualization when the eighth gate was opened and a major initiation of our planetary logos took place, producing in the human kingdom the process of individualization. So this is Esoteric Astrology 298. So if a major initiation of our planetary logos occurred at individualization, and he's only taken one major initiation at that time, until now, then it may well be that this major initiation of our planetary logos was the first cosmic initiation. All right. And they only appear, usually and normally, at the initiation of a solar logos. So, let's take a look. Then does this mean... Sorry. This mean that one time of an appearance of a being from Sirius occurred at the second initiation of our solar logos, which obviously occurred in this solar system. Is it possible? Well, I guess it depends on what kind of initiator we're talking about. Think of this, that Christ is to Sirius as Sanakumara is to X. Is Sirius the initiator of our solar logos? For the initiations of the threshold of that solar logos. So far, our solar logos has taken the two initiations of the threshold, but not the third cosmic. And we ask, who is the initiator? Is it the Logos of Sirius, who, like the Christ, could have been the initiator for the first two initiations of the threshold, or is it some other being? So, if Venus is the Christ, who is Uranus? Uranus is the Hierophant. Who is Uranus in the larger scheme of things? Is Uranus then related somehow to the Great Bear? Or could we say that a being from the Great Bear will become the initiator of our solar logos at his third initiation, which the Lord of Sirius has already taken? Well, it's analogy, of course. But if there has only been one visit from Sirius, and there have been two cosmic initiations, then we would think that it had to be related to the second of the cosmic initiations, which is related to the cosmic astral plane, which is the plain where Sirius is found for those who tread the way to it. So individualization was not that long ago, but can it be, perhaps, can it be that Sirius was active at the time of the first cosmic initiation for our solar logos? Then the second would have to have been taken a very short time ago, and then is it possible that the being from Sirius did not come? These are not possible questions possible of solution for us at this time. All right, here's the planet Jupiter, and there are references in the secret doctrine. Jupiter is a deity who is the symbol and prototype of, there it is, ritualistic worship. You can see what rays are combined here, can you not? He is the priest, sacrificer, suppliant, and medium through which the prayers of mortals reach the gods. So, in one respect, Christ plays the role of Jupiter during the Christ festival of invocation to Shambhala, because he is the priest, sacrificer, suppliant, and medium through which the prayers or invocations of the mortals reach the gods, i.e. Shambhala. But when we talk about ritualistic worship, isn't it obvious the rays that we're talking about? Ritualistic worship, blend of the seventh and sixth rays, and maybe the second. But worship suggests the sixth, and ritualism the seventh. I have thought that the rays of Jupiter are exactly those rays, the second ray soul, maybe the seventh ray monad, maybe the sixth ray personality, a higher form of sixth ray than Mars, and transcended already by the second ray. But in any case, we know for sure from what is said about Jupiter and all that is observed about Jupiter that the second and sixth ray are very strong. Ritualistic worship, all things done decently and in order, ceremonially, sometimes with pomp, which is Jupiterian quality, but not always necessarily. And there is a constant invocation from Jupiter, a constant ritualistic invocation of the higher powers. So, should we say, wishes come true under Jupiter due to this type of invocation. Jupiter is regarded as the throne of Brahma. Well, Brahma is under the third aspect. Jupiter, in very many respects, under the second, but the world of Brahma is ruled by Saturn and includes the five systemic planes when considering our planetary logos and solar logos and their focus on the cosmic physical plane. Brahma seats himself, as it were, upon Jupiter. Jupiter has much to do with, well, I have to fix that. Jupiter has much to do with the fulfillment, just that, in the world of Brahma. In a way, it is within that world, and in another way, it is outside that world in its second ray aspects. There is a throne of upon the head of Isis, Sirius, which seats the initiate at the fifth degree. He has attained kingship. And are we talking about some sort of kingship here? The throne of Brahma suggests mastership, the height of the Brahmic regime of initiation. And Jupiter and Uranus rule at the majestic fifth initiation. The sun may veil Jupiter exoterically. The sun may veil, or does veil, Uranus hierarchically. And these two combine to make the fifth initiation one of benevolent organization, or maybe benevolent reorganization. So Jupiter is a great fulfillment. Jupiter represents the great fulfillment of mastership, where man becomes the five-pointed star, five-pointed star. There it is. And a man is still a man when a master. But of the Chohans, it is said they are no longer men, as are the masters. But having passed beyond that lesser stage, have linked themselves to the great center in the highest secret place. So the throne of Brahma, it is a fulfillment, a great fulfillment of mastership. That's one way to look at it. I think Jupiter certainly is. You don't get to sit on the throne until you're the king. On the throne until you are the king, and mastership is kingship. Sirius, Leo, Jupiter. All important at the fifth degree. One becomes an entered apprentice, as it were, a first degree initiate on Sirius at the time of this mastership. And Jupiter is involved. This triangle signifies mastership and also other lesser things. Jupiter is the personification of cyclic law. That is more difficult to understand. We have the great second ray involved here. But it's under the third ray that cyclic law is really understood, the plane of all knowledge. But let's just put it like this, a personification of cyclic law. What is the purpose of cycles? Let's look at it that way. There we go. What is the purpose of cycles? And we can say fulfillment in time. So, fullness, completeness, and the reason for cyclic law is Jupiterian fulfillment. Reason for cyclic law is Jupiterian fulfillment. So, it's one of those peculiar statements. It's a bit like saying that Saturn rules the devotional faculties. You know, it's difficult to relate to that in terms of how we think about Saturn. But cycles are terms of fulfillment, and Jupiter rules that. Cycles are terms of fulfillment, which Jupiter rules. Jupiter is connected with the four of perfection. It doesn't seem to have the fourth ray per se, but its glyph looks like the number four, and the number four is used when describing the school that Jupiter is. The Sun used to be called the Eye of Jupiter. This is kind of interesting because Jupiter is the lesser being in this case. But Jupiter was also the king of the gods. And the Sun represented the all-seeing eye. So it's not so much the planet Jupiter, perhaps, that we're dealing with. Always that problem. Not so much the planet Jupiter, but Jupiter, Zeus as the greatest god of Olympus. And the heavenly bodies served this great deity. We say, at least in the public mind. So we recognize that these foci of luminescence can be considered eyes. If we have the third eye in the head, it's very much like a sun in the head. It's an intensification of the light in the head. The soul can be considered an eye, and it's like the sun. The monad, too, is the third eye of the planetary logos. It's like a sun. So every radiant star is like a cosmic eye. And the great deity presiding over all this, not so much the planet Jupiter, but Jupiter as the one who contains and rules all. We have to realize, remember, that the second ray is related to vision. Jupiter as the planet conveys vision, and the Sun also, representing the soul, the spirit, is an organ of vision for some still greater being. There is also, or also the, there is, I think, the eye of the heart with both representing a heart center. Jupiter, a heart center within our solar system, and the Sun, a heart center within a cosmic logos. Plato makes Jupiter the logos, the word of the Sun. This fits with the second logos and the second aspect of divinity. Through the second ray comes the word. And Jupiter, in its soul nature, is the dispenser of the second ray. In what role did he rule Mount Olympus? Was it in his monadic nature, or we generally don't find a first ray effect in the personality when Jupiter is operating in the horoscope? Well, the logos is the word. A logos is the word. And the word issues forth from the heart of God. Heart, soul of God. Obviously, Jupiter is a logos, but to consider the sun, as even more important, is very advanced, but Plato was an initiate, of course. So let's remark on that, was an initiate. And here, the sun is considered a greater deity. If the word of the sun, or logos, comes forth as Jupiter. So the sun then represents being, I suppose, and Jupiter, the word or logos. The mysteries were presided over by Jupiter and Saturn. Well, there are many kinds of mysteries, right? There is the great expansion of consciousness via Jupiter, and the harsh preparation and disciplining and testing under Saturn. We read some stories of the mysteries where the candidate just doesn't survive because not capable of exercising his inner spiritual faculties in the way necessary to survive in certain circumstances. If you're in a dark room full of crocodiles, you better be able to generate the light within you. See where you're going. Even then, you wonder whether it would help. Yet Uranus is the secret planet, and he is the Hierophant, and Neptune is the initiator as well. But in preparation for meeting Neptune and Uranus, the consciousness must grow and the life must come under discipline. So it's a blending of second and third ray energies, just as when the soul and personality must come into a right adjustment with each other. So this is interesting, but there were so many different kinds of mysteries, you know, and I'm reading some of the rites of Mithra and the involvement of Taurus and Mars and those kinds of things. Very suitable for Roman soldiers, but maybe the mysteries were that HBB is talking about were far deeper and dealt with consciousness particularly. Anyway, the second and third ray are involved here, and the two super principles, which might be first ray Saturn and second ray Jupiter. Saturn can be either one, you know, the third or the first ray. Jupiter, pretty well, is the second ray. Occultism makes Jupiter blue because he is the son of Saturn. That's quite an occult statement, but he is the son of Saturn, and Saturn is green. And there is a progression from the previous solar system, green, to the present one, blue. There's more in it here. In the spectrum of white light, blue follows green, does it not? So just as the Son follows the Father in time. So that is one way of looking at this. The sign of the Messiah's coming is the conjunction of Saturn and Jupiter in the sign Pisces, and the idea here that this was the great star, a conjunction, and maybe Venus was involved. Some time ago in Australia, we experienced a triple conjunction in Pisces. I'm trying to think, it could have been 1998. Jupiter was in Pisces. I guess, you know, going back to, I don't know, maybe I'll just try to go back to that time. And see how that would look. I'm not interested in the rising sign or anything like that. I'm interested in April, let's say 5th, I don't know, 1998. Let's see if there's anything of this nature. Okay. Cancel. April 5th, 1998. And we do have Jupiter in Pisces. Saturn is in Taurus, so it was not a Saturn conjunction. Yes, it was going to be maybe a little later. It was going to be something like, let's see. This, Jupiter and Venus together, very bright. And the Moon, there they are. Jupiter, Venus, and the Moon in conjunction. Doesn't make any difference where they were. They were in different houses at different times, in different places. But that was a very Christ-like experience. The Christ energy really did come through. All right, it wasn't Jupiter-Saturn. But Pisces is a great second-ray sign, ruled by Jupiter, with Venus exalted in it, and the Moon having affinity with it. So there was a real opportunity there for the coming through of the Christ force. The Great One, Messiah, was to fulfill the law. To fulfill the law. Saturn, and to bring freedom and great opportunity, Jupiter. So, the star of wonder, the star of light, as the old Christmas carol has it, was really a planetary conjunction, and the wise men were, of course, astrologers, and they knew something really important was happening. They knew that any great event in heaven would be matched by a correspondence on Earth, and they must have known something about mundane astrology to go to the place where the star was to be found. Of course, there may also have been initiates, there may have been connected with the hierarchy, they may have known very well what was happening. We have the popular version of things, and then there's the inner workings of things, which are not given to the public yet. And even Jesus or Christ spoke in parables accordingly. Venus, Jupiter, and Saturn might be considered from the standpoint of the present time as the vehicles of the three super or major principles, and I've discussed this, and I've given my impression of this. Okay, let's see here. That it is Saturn for the first principle in distributing this first ray, Jupiter for the second principle, and Venus, in this case, representing Manus, higher Manus. It is the only planet which, in our solar logos, has rulership, I think, over a subdiaphragmatic chakra. So then, more likely, as the most rapidly unfolded, but lowest in status. And, of course, Venus is intellect. Venus is sometimes called higher Manus by Annie Besant. It has a strong luminosity, intellectual luminosity, and no first ray. Saturn has first ray. Jupiter may have first ray, but certainly second. Saturn has no second. So the three super principles are found there. Mercury, Earth, and Mars are allied to these principles. And how might we look at this? If there is an alliance, then, well, we can say easily that Mercury represents mind, Mars, the astral body, and earth, the etheric physical body. So mind, in a way, represents the first aspect, the astral the second, even though Mars has a very powerful first aspect. We cannot find a way to relate Mercury or the Earth to the astral body, or Mercury to the physical body. It's got to be this way, I think. And Earth to the etheric. Earth then would have a relation to Venus, Mars to Jupiter, and Mercury to Saturn, all of which makes a lot of sense. So, in this setup of correspondences, Earth relates to Venus, just the way the physical relates to the lowest part of the triad. Mars relates to Jupiter, and indeed there is a close connection there via the sixth ray, the astral vehicle, the heart, the astral vehicle and the heart, or desire and love, and Mercury relates to Saturn, both on the third ray, with Saturn having more of the first ray. Mercury, in its highest and lowest aspects, seems to represent a third ray, even though it has the fourth ray in its soul nature. So the three super principles are affecting each one of these planets. Now it might be, I think, if we forgot about the vehicles, we might be able to, how would we do this? Earth and Jupiter have the same soul ray. Mars has very little in common with Venus except the attraction between them. Very little. Mercury and Saturn have a close connection. I think I could leave it at that. Obviously, the hidden mystery, it's not only a mystery, it's a hidden mystery. So mysteries are hard enough to penetrate, and when they're hidden mysteries, well, what do you do? Venus and Jupiter are closely connected with the Earth and form eventually an esoteric triangle. All have the second ray. So this is a second ray connection. Venus, monad and personality. Jupiter, soul. And Earth, soul. Probably I should use dashes there. What could be accomplished by this esoteric triangle? Well, I would say Buddhi Manas on Earth. I would say the soul infusion. First of all, there's a possibility of the second initiation. Those are two planets of the second initiation. Second initiation, and soul infusion of our planet. We need on our planet to take the second cosmic initiation. But this has not yet happened. Perhaps as the causal bodies of human beings expand and beautify under Venus-Jupiter, it will be more possible to bring humanity to a point where the planetary logos can take its second initiation. So I do wonder, it seems to me when I look at this triangle that it has to do with bringing the second initiation potentials to the Earth for the planetary logos himself. We are taking a kind of fourth initiation, as you know, Cosmic Fire 384, but the second cosmic still looms ahead. And until we get our astral house in order and cease with our struggles on the cosmic astral plane, which may have something to do with the fact that we're on the fourth subplane there and going through a kind of fourth initiation on our fourth chain, we will not be able to pacify the astral body and infuse it with sufficient love to take the second cosmic initiation. So that's how those two planets strike me. Venus and Jupiter are both on the second, I believe, subplane of the cosmic mental plane. Jupiter and Venus as sacred planets are, hypothetically, on the second subplane of the cosmic mental plane. But Earth's causal body, see, so we say the causal body of the Earth is only on the third. Therefore, there is something of an elevation in soul which can be offered to the planetary logos, ours. Now, you know, even at the first initiation, the human causal body has been moved to the second subplane. But here, the planetary logos of Earth has taken its first cosmic initiation, but its causal body has not been elevated to the second subplane. Unless, of course, all the causal body of our solar logos is on the first subplane, along with, I think, with the three cosmic logoi, or three persons of the Trinity. It just stands to reason that there must be some planets whose causal body is on the second subplane, and among them one would expect to find the sacred planets. In any case, there is a degree of sacredness in both Jupiter and Venus which the Earth could use, especially in this triangle. In this triangle, the second ray soul of the planetary logos of Earth is stimulated. Luminosity, expansion of consciousness, and Buddhic connection. Expansion of consciousness and Buddhic connection. Interesting things, you know. We can only go so far, right? In Jupiter's scheme, the sons of mine are just beginning their work. So are behind even Earth. Which is not to say that Jupiter is a lesser being than Earth. It's just, as I said, the analogy is the earlier chakras unfold sooner. Our solar plexus, our sacral center, it unfolded very soon. Those two. And later come the others. So Jupiter obviously represents the heart, and Jupiter represents the heart for the solar logos, and full unfoldment of the heart center requires the fourth initiation of a cosmic kind. We're not there yet, are we? And I suppose the unfoldment of Neptune and Uranus is slow also. Vulcan is coming along a little faster than the Earth. The Earth is the base of the spine, in a way. It's not ready. Maybe at the third cosmic degree, the base of the spine will be somewhat active, but not at the moment. Planet Mars. In answer to the question, what planets of those known to ordinary science besides Mercury belong to our system of worlds? The reply was Mars and four other planets of which astronomy knows nothing. Well, Pluto could be one, right? The inference is that these planets A, B, and Y, Z exist in etheric matter. So maybe we have some kind of non-sacred planets here. Pluto does not exist in etheric matter, but there could be planets connected with the sun and with the moon that do exist in etheric matter, when we're told that the sun and moon veil a planet, are we told that they are necessarily physical planets? When the sun and moon veil a hidden planet, are the planets necessarily physical? Maybe not. This sounds like the kind of question that was addressed to Master K.H. And what does it mean? Belong to the system of world what? To our system of world what? Well, there's something deleted here. And it looks like we're dealing with planets that are relatively close to the Earth. Mars is so influential on Earth, but not always in a positive way. It gives what is needed to help break the obstacles, but at the same time it reinforces much that is material, even materialistic science. If you have like Mars square Uranus or Mars opposed Uranus and you're a scientist, there's a battle on between materialistic science and the more subtle or occult science. Pluto would help there, wouldn't it? There were probably people when there was a Pluto-Uranus conjunction who had Mars opposed at some time. That Pluto-Uranus conjunction lasted quite a while. So the exoteric and the gross were opposed to the deeply penetrating subtle and etheric possibilities. Pluto-Uranus. Well, we have been told more than 115 planets in our solar system, and we seem to differentiate them from planetoids, because they had these planets had an orbit around the sun. As I'm trying to remember, maybe even certain planetoids had orbits around the sun. So we only know the most obvious parts of our solar system. Sometimes it should be called the solar sphere. I was remembering working with Charles Jane where he talked about a body by the name of Q, which was revolving around the solar center in a manner perpendicular to the ecliptic. So it's not everything that lies in the plane of the ecliptic. There are other bodies which may not, as part of the solar sphere. I don't think I can carry this question any farther. There are etheric planets, and they seem to be related to our contiguous planets, our system of worlds. I don't think we're talking about the far-out planets, unless the space between Y, A, B, and Y, Z are supposed to indicate that. So could the space between A, B, and Y, Z indicate that two of the planets are close to the sun and two are far out? Could that be the case? We'll have to just leave that. As to Mars, Mercury, and four other planets, they bear relation to the Earth, of which no master will ever speak. And is this simply a continuation of what was just said? Four etheric planets, which are parts of the secrets of initiation. Four etheric planets, which in relation to Mars and Mercury represent a mystery of which no master will speak, but will they convey in some other manner? And could we also be dealing with the inner round? Because the inner round has something to do with etheric potentials, as I recall. Let's take a look at this. inner round etheric. What does it say here? Many planetary schemes which are found only in etheric matter will be revealed to the astonished gaze, and he will find that, as in the body microcosmic, there are 7 or 10 paramount centers, but the number of other centers, but a number of other centers for the purpose of energizing various organs. So likewise, the body macrocosmic has myriads of energy focal points or feeders, which have their place, their function, and their felt effect. These centers with no dense physical globe constitute what has been sometimes called the inner round. Okay, and transmit their force through those greater centers which have been spoken of in occult books as being related to the inner round. So there is a very important idea which should be brought into connection here. 1164 Treatise on Cosmic Fire. Getting near the end of that book. Well, I feel I've been getting quite a good workout in my anticipated foray into the last 100 pages of A Treatise on Cosmic Fire, which I have not analyzed through commentaries, written commentaries. So, we may be speaking of the mysteries of the inner round. And its mysteries, it seems that we may. So there are, when we're talking about the inner round, may involve a subtle chains, but also subtle planets which work through the more obvious planets. So it's really, we are speaking of etheric opportunity, as long as one can resist the temptations. I suppose what that means is that one would want to leave the duties connected with the dense physical plane. That could be possible. Mars is in a state of obscuration at present. So, let's just say, what am I doing? All right. Mars is in a state of obscuration, and let's see. Sometimes just the little technicalities hang you up, which means that the visible globe has no life emphasis, just enough to sustain it, to sustain its presence. There has been a retreat of life to the inner planes, a treat of the life of the fourth globe to the inner planets. Okay. Mars has two satellites to which he has no right, and AAB fills these in as astral and mental, but we also have Deimos and Phobos. But AAB insists that these are astral and mental satellites and not sort of the fear and terror which Deimos and Phobos represent. Phobia, the great fear. The translation of Deimos and Phobos, let's see. I think we can get that. Deimos and Phobos. Greek mythology, Demeus, Daemon, fear, dread, and terror, and his twin brother, panic and fear. Well, they're pretty pretty related, aren't they? They both have the fear and dread. It'd be interesting to see what effect they have in the horoscopes of those we may know. But how is it that Mars would have no right? Is there something about having gravitationally captured these satellites? And if they are astral and mental, to what beings do they belong? Often, as there is a question of materializing or dematerializing, there is passage through an astral or a mental stage. So do we have a materialization going on here or a dematerialization? And in terms, if it were a dematerialization, are they negative influences which should have been allowed to dematerialize but somehow have been captured? Mars is a septenary chain. Well, we see that in the maps that have been drawn here. Here is Mars. And it has quite a square configuration, as has the Earth, as has Vulcan, and as has Jupiter. But there may be some differences, because notice that through Saturn, Saturn intercepts on the, not at the diagonal. Here is the Saturn intercept on the diagonal for Earth and Jupiter, but for Vulcan and Mars, the intercept is on one of the sides of the square. I wonder if one can see any better here. Maybe. I think so. In any case, there are probably subtle differences. Notice the way the dotted lines are drawn here to a central point for Earth and Jupiter. And there's a trinity in the middle, but the diagonal, or the whatever chain this is, receives the direct impulse from the center, as does Jupiter, but not so. Not so. There is no intervening chain here. And here. And so in these details comes an understanding of the structure and quality of these planetary chains. Well, I think we're at the point where I can say that this is the end. The end. This is the end. End of Esoteric Astrology 156A, page 661. One could hope to go a little faster, but beginning of Esoteric Astrology 156B, page 661. Okay.